It is a great pleasure to welcome to Best Ideas 2021 returning MOI Global Instructor Eric DeLaMarter, Portfolio Manager of Half Moon Capital, a research-intensive, deep value-oriented long-short partnership that invests across various sectors and markets with a focus on small mid-cap companies and special situations. Prior to founding Half Moon, Eric was at Stellium Investment Management, a value-oriented hedge fund in New York. He was also an associate at Lineage Capital, a middle-market private equity fund, and an investment banking analyst at RBC Capital Markets. Eric holds an MBA from the Heilbronn Center for Graham and Dodd Investing at Columbia Business School with a concentration in applied value investing. He also has a BA from the University of Michigan. Eric, I've truly enjoyed your presentations in the past and look forward to this one today. I'll turn it to you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John. I appreciate the opportunity to present again here this year. And thank you for that introduction. As John mentioned, approaching 9 years, typically focus on more special situations, often circumstances where there's some sort of temporary disconnect related to either a corporate event, some sort of technical trading, or a performance shortfall. And I'd say this company I'm presenting here today fits squarely in that category. The previous six positions I presented are listed here, and I think are representative of the types of things we typically like to look at. I think the situation here is just as compelling as these, and I think I'm confident will lead to similar returns over the next year. And bringing it to the company itself is Tile Shop, ticker TTSH. This is a smaller, for us, typically $200 million market cap approximately business. And I'd like to just note up front, this is OTC listed. And while that is not an area we often look at, given the upside potential and sightline to uplisting, I encourage folks to continue to tune in despite that fact. And that is, in fact, one of the reasons why I think there's such a big disparity in the price versus its value here. This is a business that I think has about 100% upside, as we'll detail, multiple catalysts that we'll get into. So Tile Shop, operating under the retail name The Tile Shop, has about 142 locations throughout the Southeast, Central, and Northeast United States. Typical store is about 200,000 square feet, putting that in kind of relative perspective. Home Depot and the big box home improvement stores have about 4,000 to 5,000 square feet dedicated to flooring. Floor and Decor, its biggest competitor, has about 19,000 square feet. They're essentially the largest in terms of selection and size, dedicated to floor tiles and wall tiles, with five DCs supporting the business across the U.S. In terms of its focus itself, companies basically include some smaller competitors and operators and then the large big box guys itself. They essentially compete on the basis of assortment. They're typically in the Tile Shop finer quality, frequently scarcer, higher end, more versus less more commoditized tiles. Typical price point based on an analysis we've done for Tile Shop is about $10 to $11 per square foot for their tiles, and versus about $2 to $3 for the bigger box guys in Floor and Decor. Very little overlap in terms of actual tiles between those stores. Say Tile Shop can be categorized as more of a specialty, somewhat more of a boutique, and focused on the higher end market, versus the other guys are more of the mass market, lower end. They have over 200 suppliers globally, many of whom are exclusive to Tile Shop. I think that's relevant because of the clear competitive advantage. And most of the buyers here, or at least influence, comes through the pros, being the builders, designers, installers. And however, many of the retail people and the users and purchasers, the homeowners, want to come into the store, see it, touch it. I think that's a relevant data point to mention, as it likely mitigates some online disintermediation that may come, as we've seen in some of the other, say, furniture side of the housing and home building product segment. Taking a step back, the company was founded in 1985, went public in 2012. It was a strong growth story then, on the backs of a lot of momentum in the openings and such. And then through that period, up until about the end of 2018, was performing well, continuously comping in the mid-single digits, or mid-double digits, expanding his footprint, opening 15 to 20 stores a year. Then started to realize some challenges with some of those newer stores in terms of management execution on the store level, store managers, that is. And then concurrent with that, we're implementing a new ERP system, a fact that challenges has befallen many other companies. The implementation caused some significant disruption in the business. This particularly manifested itself in some supply chain inventory issues, some challenges containing and maintaining some of the pro relationships. And that was, as you see in these numbers here, began to start to led to its first down year in 2019. This then led in October of 2019 for management's decision to delist the stock, concurrent with suspending its dividend and halting its share repurchase program. This resulted in a huge turnover in the shareholder base, essentially losing all the institutional following ahead. Institutional holders stock went, as you can see here, from about $20 a share to, and has been languishing down and since at around where it stands today at about $4 per share. Subsequent to that, the delisting, the management team and board members curiously accumulated, doubling their position to about 30% of the company. Thus bringing the question what the real motivation for the delisting was. Was it to depress the stock to their advantage versus what they had articulated in the marketplace as the rationale, which was cost savings? I'll let folks take decide what they think may be the case there, but ultimately those parties were sued, settled last year, last July, and the chairman and those involved were subsequently been replaced. I think it's an important distinction here to also note that the stock was not deregistered, but delisted. Distinction being deregistration or delisting just means they're trading on OTC. They are fully now still compliant with all SEC filings, thus could list in without any incremental SEC review or on one of the major exchanges. The only real cost saving that they have here, an incremental cost they would need to bear, is D&O insurance. So clearly the course and rationale and from a cost savings and upside perspective is kind of modest and should be, and thus entered some activists. In September, B. Riley took and filed a 13D, disclosing 8% stake, subsequently accumulated over a million more shares, now on about 9.2% of the business. And 272 Capital followed up that 13D independently with their own letter articulating the rationale for uplisting, relative underperformance of tile shop stores and discount and disconnect in the price of the stock. Now, discussing kind of what has been going on here in the pandemic, starting like all stores across its peer base had closures that extended through the June period, quite disruptive to the business. But they continue to keep a lot of these stores closed or keep these stores at constrained hours, for instance, not still open on Sundays. This is doesn't make a whole lot of sense, as if you look, their biggest competitors, including Lumber Liquidators, that is their busiest day based on foot traffic. And then hours were also curtailed over 25%, closing at 5 and is really and meaning the retail customer, not the pro, the person that works the traditional 9 to 5 hour day, isn't able to come into the store without leaving their office or leaving their work, thus leaving some opportunity clearly on the table that is probably going to others. They've since November started expanding those hours, increasing those hours, yet they still remain closed on Sundays. I see as those business hours normalize, about 10 to 20% easily increase in sales. And that is kind of underway now. And I think with the influence of the activists will only accelerate. And so the ERP implementation that I mentioned that disrupted the business in 2019 has been resolved largely and implemented fully. So what I think this is going to result in and starting to manifest itself is improved analytics around the local and regional demand. So knowing what the market people in the market are building with, what products, better optimization of inventory therein. Enhanced customer loyalty programs. This is critical as it relates to the pros being the major decision makers and installers and builders. And then better training of their sales reps to know what to sell, what incentives structure there is, and to push people towards the highest returning and most appealing for the companies in terms of product mix. That is yet to manifest itself in the numbers, but it's now underway. And I think we'll start to hit and show, demonstrate performance in the coming quarters. Now, currently you have this kind of strong tailwind demand cycle for the product that they sell, tiles. This is driven by new home sales, which is manifested by lower interest rates, population shifts, deurbanization. If you looked at the Q3 backlog increases for the home builders, particularly those within their geography, they were all up about 40 to 80%. And as you look at from order to completion, a typical home right now is taking over a year to complete, tiles being one of the products that goes in towards the end of that cycle. So you've got at least several quarters of runway here. And it's also have a lot of R&R going on. People's market share, dollar share is being spent towards home improvement. Often that is taking place in the form of upgrades to the kitchen, to the bathroom areas that are highly with a lot of tile and tile usage, further increasing the demand and likely being a continued tailwind for them. As you can see here, the credit card data just from the first 2 months of, for the last 2 months of the quarter, we're up 20%. I haven't seen no December data yet, but all other indicators suggest that there's continued strength coming to benefit them. So moving to the valuation, the stock trades at less than 6x EBITDA. I think it's hard to find any company that's not severely impaired trading anywhere near that multiple in this market, particularly across its base of home improvement, home building products companies. Nothing trades it probably even anywhere near there. Its closest peer, Lumber Liquidators, at 11x, Floor and Decor at 30x. Both have similar drivers and product mix. Floor and Decor has a bit more of an accelerated growth trajectory, and I don't think 30 times is the appropriate multiple. But if you say 10 to 12 times off of the current value, current EBITDA for a tile shop, you're looking at close to a double, if not more. And that you have to realize is off of also some extended closures that relatives and peers and haven't fully realized the benefits of that ERP implementation that I mentioned. If you look out to 2021, I have them at under 5x EBITDA. So clearly there's a huge discrepancy between what I think is with the market, any of its peers and on a standalone basis are currently trading at. Moving to the risks, clearly home exposure, which I think are mitigated largely by those factors that I previously discussed, and in a situation where there perhaps no uplisting in or those technical challenges persisted, but given we're entering now the proxy season and the relative benefits to uplisting versus the reported cost savings, I think it's a pretty apparent that we're going to probably get some changes made in the near term here, particularly given the incentives of the current management team, if nothing else. So tying everything together here and summarizing, catalysts are being that NASDAQ uplisting. That will expand the shareholder base, improve trading liquidity, paving the course to Russell 2000 inclusion. We're not far off the $5 threshold, which is a technical kind of constraint some fund managers have, particularly on the long-only mutual fund side, and close to that. And from the fundamental operational, increasing home building activity, as mentioned, normalization of business hours, R&R increasing, realization of some of those ERP benefits that were lagging and dragging on the business and not allowing them to fully realize the benefit of some of the demand that took place last year, 2020, that many of its peers so benefited from. Then that will lend in turn lead to increased corporate communication, further potential sell side initiations, and reinstitution of kind of an institutional awareness, its inclusion in a lot of funds. If none of this happens, I just don't see this business sticking around these levels for too long, given the disconnect in price, potential for management improvement, company business improvement, and fundamental tailwinds and attractiveness overall of the company itself. I see a financial buyer potentially stepping in there, and that's Where it stands, happy to now open it up. It's a pretty straightforward story, but happy to delve into in Q&A any of the initial particulars that folks may have or would like to address. Eric, I'll also include in the appendix some other documents.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much for the presentation, Eric. Maybe a question on the path forward here. You mentioned B. Riley has taken a position as well. What would be kind of the activist thrust here, if you will? What's the focus there?
So B. Riley filed about 3 months ago. They have filed the D, have not articulated what course they want to pursue. This other fund, 272 Capital, did write a letter. They haven't filed the D yet, but they're articulated the fact that the peer set has stocks have appreciated significantly more than that of Tile Shop, and particularly the discrepancy in the multiple that I just addressed in the valuation. And that is principally due to the fact that they have not relisted on the NASDAQ. So those both parties, I believe, are going to be pushing for that first and foremost. Second of all, likely more normalization of business hours and potentially management change. That is yet to be determined, but we're entering, as I noted, proxy season coming into their annual meeting May, early June. I think you'll start to see more public disclosure about what their intentions are in these coming months here.
On the operational side, what would be the key data points to keep an eye on to gauge how the thesis is playing out?
Well, I think sales growth relative to peers and relative to the industry, which would suggest, are they capitalizing or capturing the opportunities that others are? Have they somewhat regained some of the share that perhaps they've conceded by having fewer hours, not having inventory in full stock like they should have been because of those European supply chain interruptions? I think that would probably be key. Margins being representative of sales incentives. Are the sales folks selling the higher quality products, the higher margin products? I'd say those are the kind of the key data points, and as well, inventory turns. Are they effectively managing that inventory they have? Are they ordering the things that people are wanting to buy? And I think that will be starting to manifest out. Q4 would be a good signpost for that, and then Q1 and Q2 for sure.
When it comes to capital allocation, where would you set the priorities, and is that in line with what the management's been doing?
So they've been using cash flow to pay down debt. That has gotten their now have a clean balance sheet and cash. In fact, previously had a bit of debt as a result of opening new stores. Now they have this cleaner balance sheet and strength in the market around them. I would encourage them to open more stores. They've not intended. I think they have one planned opening, but I think that is a priority in terms of the growth of the footprint. There, as you saw on the map, there's a lot of holes or a lot of area of potential, I should say, for them to grow geographically within just their existing serviced by DC footprint. And I think that should be, now they've got the ERP system in place, they can effectively manage inventory, hopefully demonstrate that, and then open those stores. I think that should be the next leg of growth and the next leg of kind of emphasis for them. You know, if not, share repurchases. I mean, the stock obviously very inexpensive, and they have ample liquidity and cash to do so. So that would be kind of the two priorities I would emphasize and push management on if I were in my conversation I've discussed with them.
Can you talk just a bit more about the cyclicality of this business?
Yeah, sure. So it is housing, the two biggest drivers being new home builds. So new home needs obviously tiles and furnishing. Then two being renovation, remodel being driven by economic activity related to personal wealth. We're seeing this I think it will probably taper off in the next couple of years, but people spending more time at home, you're working from home, you want to have, you know, not traveling as much, that being kind of a temporary tailwind. But in terms of the longer term, people now moving out of cities, that's in home building activity only expanding. Those are kind of the factors that are kind of driving that, lower rates as well. I think that just those factors alone should drive the business for the next at least year or two years, I think, given, I think, how much demand and how little supply there's in terms of new home builds.
Terrific. Well, I think I'll leave it here. Eric, thank you so much for bringing this idea to our attention. I would just encourage our members to feel free to follow up with you with their own thoughts or questions, either directly or to contact us for an introduction. Truly appreciate you taking the time to be with us again in this forum.
Yeah, my pleasure. Please feel free to reach out for any questions or folks who like to address further.
Terrific. Thank you, Eric. Goodbye for now.
Bye.